Hey there, Yag here. Before we get to today's episode, I would like to discuss with you about a new podcast that I've started to listen, which is part of the HubSpot podcast network. It's called I Digress, hosted by Troy Sandage. I Digress talks about how you can eliminate complexity, complications, and confusion and create clarity in your business to achieve scalable and sustainable success. In fact, one of the recent episodes that I really got excited about was the one which discusses marketing and sales infrastructure for sustainable business growth. If this topic interests you, I would urge you to listen to I Digress wherever you get your podcasts. By the way, this podcast is also brought to you by Avoma, the number one meeting lifecycle assistant. Every meeting has a life cycle, the set of things that you do before the meeting, during the meeting, and after the meeting. What if there was an AI assistant that could automate all your low-value tasks and let you focus on the things that really matter to you and keep you productive? That's what Avoma does for you. To learn more, check out www.avoma.com. And now, to our show.
Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast. The number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world.
Hello and welcome to another brand new episode of the ABM Conversations podcast. And this is me, your host, Yag. In today's episode, we are going to discuss how to create a personalized content experience to drive demand and improve customer engagement. And to discuss that, today we have with us Randy Frisch, the co-founder, CMO, and president of Uberflip, a content experience platform that helps marketers to create better content experiences at every stage of the buyer's journey. If you know Randy, you must definitely have heard of his excellent book, Fuck Content Marketing. Quite a title, isn't it? Randy is also the host of Connex, the Content Experience Show podcast. He was named one of the top 50 fearless marketers in the world by Marketo. And here's a fun fact, something that's common between him and me. He is by far, or one of the few on the planet who is not a Star Wars fan. So without any further ado, let's get to Randy. Randy, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you here.
Awesome. That intro was so much fun. I was listening along and enjoying. Hopefully everyone else did. Excited to be here. Excited to talk about ABM and the role content plays.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm super kicked. Right. Let's get started. You've written a book with quite a title. If I'm not wrong, the first version was actually in the form of a long blog written sitting on a flight that your marketing team didn't want to publish. So let's start with that. What made you write a book that starts with an F-bomb? I mean, at a glance, it reads like you were really mad about the way content marketing is done. So what's your why?
It's a great question. It definitely came out of frustration. And the frustration was when I came across a stat by Serious Decisions, now part of Forrester, that talked about the amount of content that never got used. It was something around the range of 70% of content wasn't used. And that, it didn't make sense to me. I actually reached out to the people at Sirius at the time, and I needed some context there. You know, what did they mean by used? And their point was the content that just got thrown on your blog and ended up on page 7 after 3 weeks as we create more and more content.
Right.
That's not going to be found unless someone's really searching for something targeted, but then they come in to that asset and they don't really know where to go next. The reality is everyone in a company is searching for content all the time. I'm talking in the company, like your sales reps, your customer success reps, your marketers, they're all trying to find the right content for their go-to-market strategy. Now, our buyers are doing the same thing. They're trying to learn about your company and they're searching all over the place. And that's where I just got frustrated, because there is no shortage of content anymore. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we may have been short on content to solve problems, to help people self-discover. Now we're just overwhelmed. So the F-bomb, the fuck content marketing, if you will, was not the idea that it's a bad thing. It was more of this idea of what is the point of creating all this content? if we're not going to actually find ways to leverage it internally and for our buyers.
Right. Absolutely. It makes sense. You know, I've come across so many situations wherein I know that my own sales team is not using my content, it's frustrating. But, you know, on a lighter note, did you consider any other title for your book?
Yeah, I did. I definitely did. To be honest, it's funny. You referenced that my team wasn't cool with me doing this as a blog post a couple of years before I wrote the book. It took me months to get them comfortable with dropping that F-bomb and also that suggestive element that I didn't believe in content marketers, which was far from the case. Content marketers are so talented. When it came time to the book, I'll be honest, at first, I thought it was too brash. I thought that, you know, I was also trying to think like, how am I going to show this to my kids, you know, dropping the F-bomb like this and writing a book. I mean, we try and have a swear jar in our own home. But at that point, people who had read my blog post, people who had read the transcript of the book, they said, there's no way to skirt around this. You know, the boldness has to be there because sometimes we have to look at the problems that we've created and acknowledge them before we carry forward. The carry forward is that focus on content experience. It's in the subtitle of the book, and it's a big emphasis of the book overall, is defining what content experience is, providing a method for marketers and sales reps to adopt to better leverage content in their organization. But as you said really well, Yag, we've got to start with why somehow.
Yeah.
Sometimes. And the why in this case is realizing that we've created a problem by creating so much content. So it's really hard to get someone to say, okay, well, I got to focus on content experience. We need to understand why. And the why is because we've mastered the ability to create great, compelling content. What we need to do better at is putting that content in front of our buyers, especially when we talk about topics like account-based marketing. Account-based marketing is all about relating to our buyer in a personalized way. It's all about engaging with the people who are most likely to buy from us. They expect personalization. And when I say expect personalization, I don't expect this, you know, high level, great, we know your name. I mean, it's, you know, 10, 20 years ago, that was pretty cool, right? Like you get an email from a big company and be like, hey, Yag, you know, we've got all this great information for you. And you'd be like, oh my God, how did they know my name? This is so cool. Now we know how marketing works. We know how mail merges work. We know how marketing automation works. We understand that we get on lists. And now we get that email and we're like, did I actually sign up for this? There's been a shift in terms of what we expect. We expect brands to be able to meet us with the content that matters to us. And this really comes, when you look at it, it comes from our consumer lives. As consumers, we use apps like Netflix to watch the movies when we want to watch them. We use apps like Amazon because Amazon knows what I need to buy. It knows when I'm out of my protein powder somehow. And even now I do my workouts on a Peloton treadmill and they know the instructors that I want to work out with. And they know the type of music that I like to work out to. You know, this element of being able to personalize the content in all those elements, whether it's buying products, watching movies, working out, that same experience needs to be replicated into our B2B marketing.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I can't tell you how frustrated I get when there are pings on my LinkedIn DM that says, hey, Yag, we support the same club, saw you on LinkedIn, and call it personalization, right? But here's the thing. Randy. Sadly, what gets passed on around as personalization in MarTech sometimes, you know, tends to be very little in terms of contextual relevance for what, you know, what we're trying to do. So let's say, for example, when I say that, hey, I know your problem, and if I talk about the solution that is relevant to what you're currently facing or probably helping you with something, then that makes more sense. So for marketers tuned into the show right now, what would you say is meaningful personalization? And how would you suggest that we can achieve this at scale in the context of what's relevant in terms of content or what the customer is looking for?
That's a great question. So first off, I couldn't agree more with the way you laid that out, is the expectations sometimes of marketers and buyers for personalization. There's a disconnect there. In fact, my team did a survey a little over a year ago, and we went out to a combination of both marketers and buyers, and we asked the exact same questions. And one of them that we asked is this question of, what does it mean to have a personalized experience? What does that mean to you in the buying cycle? Now, when the buyer answered, their answer was very different than the marketer. The marketer had three top answers. They said that personalization to them was that I could drop the buyer's name, their company, and their job title. If I could drop those onto a landing page, into an email, whatever it is, then I was personalizing the experience. When we asked the same question, though, to the buyer, they did have the fact that they knew my company name and they had my personal name. But their top item was exactly the ability to solve my problems, right? And it was amazing. Like, this was a checklist item of what is personalization. And the marketer wasn't saying, I can solve your problem. The buyer was expecting that. So I think what we need to be able to shift to is realize that personalization is not me saying, hey, Yag. It's more so me saying, hey, Yag, here's what you're looking for. Now, I'll give you a real life example that we can all relate to. And I already kind of floated this one earlier with Netflix. Every week, at least once a week, I don't know how often, I get emails from Netflix. And the email subject is something along the lines of, hey, Randy, we've got great picks for you tonight. That gets my attention. Don't get me wrong. The fact my name's in there, they've got, you know, great picks for me, I'm intrigued. But really why I open that email, and I don't open so many others, the reason I open that is I know that they're actually going to curate movies and TV shows and documentaries that are going to match with my interests. If we as marketers can emulate that, if we can send out to our prospect or our customer and say, hey, Randy, I've got the solutions to help you achieve your goals this year. And I know that the content in there will match things that tie to the fact that I'm the CMO of a software company, the fact that I'm in a certain, you know, area of the world, the fact that I have these certain goals. If you can show me content that solves that, I'm going to be likely to open up that email. But if it feels very generic, if it feels like what I get from a cable subscription, then I'm not logging in. I'm not opening that email.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, glad you brought in this Netflix as an example. Something that I experienced personally was that I'm a big fan of Christopher Nolan and I love Batman movies. And this is something that I observed. The Batman movie recommendation that I was getting had the Joker image versus somebody else looking at it, they had, the Batman image. So Netflix could know that I'm a fan of Heath Ledger more than Christian Bale. So that was fantastic.
Absolutely. I mean, the algorithms of these companies is astounding in terms of what they're doing. Yeah. Another great example is Spotify. You know, and I think a lot of the language that we see when we open up the Spotify app shows that they're trying to pull on these cords. They're trying to really understand us. You know, when you open up Spotify, there's this section called Made for You, right? And you know, those words, I think, are the way we need to think as marketers, is how do we make content for every buyer? Now, when I say that, a lot of people listening to this podcast are going to get overwhelmed. They're going to say, you know, I'm trying to execute on account-based marketing. I've got 2,000 accounts that I'm targeting. There's no way I can go and make content for every one of my buyers. I'd be sitting there creating content all day, every day. And I think that's where we have the wrong idea of what we mean by made for you. Let's go back to Spotify for a moment. When I open up that app, right, on my phone, on my computer, wherever I might be doing so, they're not actually making music for me. Right? Like AC/DC is not out there creating some new tune for me on the fly, right? It feels that way because it's so handpicked. It's so curated. They know the songs I like. They know the stuff I keep going to, that they find similar lookalike content and they serve it up for me. But it is content that exists. And that's where we have to wrap our heads around, is we don't have to go out and create new content for every one of our buyers. We need to just do a really good job tagging the content that we have around the different elements of personalization and segmentation that we understand our buyers. So that could be, you know, their job title, the vertical that they come from, all sorts of different traits that we start to understand. When we have that, and using data like intent and using, you know, an understanding of first party data through our marketing automation platforms, we can start to understand what content we can serve on the fly to every buyer. And depending on the scale, if you're doing ABM as like a true, you know, one-to-one for 10 accounts, you may handpick existing content. But when you get up to the scale, as we said, of 2,000 accounts, you need to be able to rely on some AI to start to search and find the right content. That's exactly what Spotify is doing, right? They've got millions of people. No one's sitting there building playlists, right? Like, I built playlists for the girls I had crushes on when I was 13 years old. It took a lot of time, right? Even now with Spotify, they couldn't sit there and do that manually. We need to rely on proper tagging and understanding of who our buyer is by their engagement data.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, based on our conversation until now, I can clearly see that you and I are kind of on the same page when it comes to content being at the forefront of customer engagement and even, you know, being that thing where you go on and build the relationship. And yet what happens is a lot of companies treat content like it's a siloed function of marketing. So what I'm talking about is, say, the typical goals are, hey, outrank the competition or build tons of content assets that nobody's seeing on the fifth or sixth page of Google. Or at best, what happens is there are a few hoo-hoos on Slack and then you push it on social media and that's it. Here's the worst part. The thing is, say I Google how to do account-based marketing and or say maybe even search that on a podcast player. I can bet you $1,000 to say that 5 to 10 results that I see on the top tend to say the same thing with different languaging and does not even give me the right kind of answer that I'm looking for. So what I want to ask you is, as someone who leads marketing at a business whose core proposition is offering this personalized experience, what are the common mistakes that you see SaaS content marketers making here?
Sure. It's a great question. And I'm going to give listeners a bit of a framework that I use as a marketing leader myself to think through the progression of what we need to achieve. But first, let me answer your question, Yag, on what are some of the mistakes that we make. I think it comes back to what we were saying earlier. The fuck content marketing that I called out in my book was this idea of just throwing all the content and hoping that people will find it. You know, a lot of things that we see as an example on people's websites is we create these content repositories, resource centers, content hubs, whatnot, and it's just a dump of content. You know, our blog is a great example of that. People who have blogs that are chronologically listed make no sense to me. If someone comes to your website and they want to learn about you and they go to the blog, the first one asset is not necessarily the most relevant to them. It may be the asset on page 9, but no one's going to find that unless they search properly from an SEO perspective, exactly what you might be looking for.
Yeah.
We need to better guide the customer by letting them understand what content is most relevant to them, as we've been saying. So the way I want people to think about it, as I said, is this framework that I use a lot with my team. And there's three different elements to it. It's very simple. It's the idea of identify, attract, and engage. And I'll walk you through each of these and what I'm getting at. The first element is how we identify the right buyers. And there's a lot of great technology out there today that helps us with this. You know, we've got the ability to use intent platforms like the Six Senses of the world, the Demand Bases of the world, you know, Terminus, Rollworks. You know, a lot of the players who are doing some really impressive work here to help us understand who may be our buyer. In addition to that, we have a lot of data living in our existing marketing automation platforms and our CRM, such as Salesforce.com. Together, that allows us to identify who are our buyers. And we hear that all the time when we talk about account-based marketing. The first step is identify the accounts most likely to buy from you and target them. So once we've done that, once we understand who we need to identify, our life is not solved, right? I think early ABM was like, you know, build this list and they're going to come. I mean, this is no, you know, Kevin Costner Field of Dreams. This is, you know, I know you don't like Star Wars, you said off the top, but hopefully you like that one. So really what we need to do is take that list of target accounts and we need to go and engage with them in a personalized way. Now, the first step to doing that, though, is attracting them. To attract them, we use a variety of different channels. And this is no different nowadays than it was for years and years of how we've attracted buyers with marketing. We run ads. We send emails. Our sales reps send emails. We use social media. We use PR. We use a variety of different channels to get in front of our buyers on a day-to-day basis. And that's where we deploy a lot of our marketing spend. A lot of our marketing program dollars are in this bucket of attract. It's how we grab people's attention when so many people are competing for it. But the last part that a lot of people don't look at is the idea of how do we engage them? And this is different than attract. Attracting is how do I grab your attention? But as we know, when we send out an email, that's the part that's going to attract them, but it doesn't keep them engaged. No one sticks in their inbox for very long. We as marketers try and drive them through some sort of CTA to a destination of sort. And that is where engagement really happens. That is the content experience that we need to put together to ensure that every channel has a matching content experience at the end. When we do that, we ensure that someone comes in perhaps on a blog post or a video that we've linked them to, but we can also start to create that Netflix or Spotify-like experience so they go from one asset to the next. Now, the interesting thing about this three-step framework is I partnered with Forrester this past year, and we did some research together looking at people's confidence across those three pillars: identify, attract, and engage. And the first one, identify, 73%, I think it was, of buyers felt confident, that they could identify the right buyers today. All right. Yeah. The next bucket, attract, over 60% felt like they could nail that bucket as well. And that's pretty good in terms of, you know, people's confidence level. The astounding part was the last piece, and that was the engage element. And only 11% of marketers felt like they had control over being able to engage buyers on that last step. And I think that is the opportunity that we have, you know, just kicking off 2022 and the year ahead and beyond that, is we have to make sure that once we have identified the right buyer and we've grabbed their attention, that we keep it. Because if we don't, we're wasting so many resources to go and engage with those people to not keep them around. And we end up continuing to have to go back and bring them back to the table again, which drives up our customer acquisition costs and makes it really hard to be profitable with any deals that we do close.
With that, let me take a moment to thank our sponsors, HubSpot. In one of our recent episodes, we talked about customer-led growth, where customer relationships truly become the foundation of a successful business model. At the heart of this model is a true understanding of what makes customers tick, which is where the HubSpot CRM platform can be your greatest asset. With new features dedicated to helping your sales teams improve your customer experience, HubSpot is on a mission to help millions of companies grow better, starting with your CRM platform. Get real-time insight into your calls and call analysis. And with more visibility into customer conversations, coaching and customer feedback becomes that much more easier. Plus, with easy share meeting links, customers can see availability and book meetings with you, all from the HubSpot platform, which cuts out the what time works for you black hole conversation. Learn more about how you can transform your customer experience with the HubSpot CRM platform at HubSpot.com. Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I can't agree more with you about the last part where the engagement is quite low. It's kind of, as marketers, we are not confident once that comes in. You know, people focus more on demand gen or creation, but not after that. And here's something that I wanted to ask you from an Uberflip perspective as well. You know, one thing about my understanding of Uberflip, I'm not sure if I'm exactly right here. The idea of sending visitors to a content hub and not sending them to, say, other sources such as YouTube or LinkedIn or wherever that content is available. While I get the business perspective, isn't it like putting them into a walled garden? I might be totally off base, but what I'm trying to understand here is this idea majorly about controlling the experience? And if yes, why do you think it's beneficial to both consumers as well as you as a business?
That's a great question, Ag. So let's back up and make sure everyone knows the challenge versus, you know, plug away at Uberflip specifically, because I think we all struggle a little bit with this. It's really easy to post content to channels like YouTube, right? If we have a video, it's a great player, it's got great reach. But the reality is, you know, people are not going to necessarily stumble upon your video on YouTube, unless, again, they're searching for something quite specific. The reason we don't want to send someone to YouTube is simply because YouTube's focus is keeping them on YouTube, not keeping them on your YouTube channel. So we all know that there's that recommended content panel that slides in usually from the right. And within there, you're going to have sometimes even your competitor's content, or you're going to have some crazy sports highlights because the person's into sports. YouTube's algorithm is focused on keeping them there and getting them to engage in ads over time, not engage in your own content. So what we need to do is, once we've attracted someone, let's go back to our three-step model. We have identified the right buyer. We've attracted them through some sort of spend. At that point, we want to keep them engaged. And we want to keep them engaged with us without potential for distractions. Doing so, to your point, is very focused on us, our brand, but ultimately it helps that buyer navigate through the problem that they're there to solve. I mean, otherwise we all know what our lives are like. We land on a page, we don't remember what we got there for because we've done six other things and we've been tempted by six other opportunities. So I think it is a mutually beneficial outcome, as long as we can live up to that expectation of being able to keep them engaged. And that's not easy, right? You know, we need to be able to ensure that the content we're showing them is extremely relevant. There's this thing I say that you know, we all do as consumers on a daily basis, and we kind of don't realize how quickly we make these decisions. One of them, we've all done this before. You download a new app, you open up that app for the very first time. There's a few pop-ups that come up, right? And there's somewhat, you know, hardware, software interplay of, you know, can this app track your location? Yeah. Can they track things you've done on other websites? More and more, we're seeing these tied to privacy. And we make these decisions in such a microsecond of, where do I want to click? Yes or no? You know, do I think this one can add value? And if we feel that we can add value, or we can get value back from allowing them access to our data, then we are very happy to trust. So YouTube is an example I think a lot of people have come to trust, even though, as we said, its goal is just to keep you engaged on their site. I think where we're going to start to see a shift in the future is an expectation with brands to meet that same degree of trust. And we've already seen over the last number of years, you know, with the need for consent, that quick ask on a website, can we track you through cookies on the site? And we have to quickly say yes or no. Right now, a lot of us just say, yeah, sure, keep the website going. What I think we're going to reach a point, though, is people will start to say, well, is this site going to actually be able to provide personalization for me? Are they going to provide data and insights? If yes, if I believe they can, then absolutely track. If not, no, I don't want you to be tracking me. And those are the things that we're going to have to live up to as marketers and brands to ensure that we can build these ongoing relationships with our customers.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't agree more. And, you know, going back to one of the conversations that we had previously where, you know, we spoke about 80% of this content that we produce going to waste or not being used. You know, it's one key question that I wanted to ask, because we also touched upon account-based marketing there. Do we want, you know, a massive volume of people to consume our content, or does it make better sense for, say, 100 key decision makers to consume my piece of content? That way, you know, I can just focus and bring a focused audience into this hub, and I can let them consume that content, and I can start tracking their behavior, and then my, you know, we can reach out to them when the time is right.
That's a loaded question. I hate the it depends, but I think people have different goals and different outcomes of how they're integrating account-based marketing as a strategy in their go-to-market. You know, there's people who have said, I'm only going to go with ABM and I'm only going to target these accounts. And there's others who have said that I'm going to, you know, take on account-based marketing once I've got people qualified through lead generation efforts, and I'm going to really apply focus through ABM tactics to those. I don't think one or the other is necessarily right or wrong. I think, you know, some businesses are just a much bigger engine, and it's going to take time for us to be able to pull to a grander ABM strategy out of the gate in terms of how we handle customer acquisition.
Right, right. All right, so now that we are getting close towards the 30-minute mark of the entire podcast, I'm going to switch gears and move to this next section called the rapid fire, where I'm going to shoot 5 pointed questions at you. And the questions might be short, the answers need not be, and this is my attempt to put you on the spot. So are you ready for that, Randy?
I can't wait.
All right. So here's question number one. What's one thing that you've learned as a marketing manager at Rubbermaid that helped you transition as a co-founder or CMO at Uberflip?
Oh, wow. That's a blast from the past. I mean, that's over 20 years ago. But that was a really informative experience for me. My first job right out of university was working at the brand we all know, Rubbermaid. And the first part of the job was not what I thought it was going to be. The first, year and a half, I was in a role that I thought it was going to be marketing, because that's what I wanted to be. It was called field marketing, which was essentially, we kidded on the road. We were kind of like these glorified stock boys going into stores to make sure our product was out there. And I remember wanting to quit at least once a week going through this. I was going to Walmarts and making sure that our products were looking good on the shelves and whatnot. And I remember saying to myself, like, this isn't going to help me. I couldn't believe that I went to university and got a degree in marketing to go stock shelves is what my entitled mindset was at that time. But it was only when I progressed into a product marketing role there in the years to follow that I realized that I would have had no context to what was happening at store level and what would work in terms of me sending products to stores as a marketer had I not had that experience in the field. It was so informative to understand how people shopped, what products people looked for, what they looked at as they evaluated in aisle. And I think that informed a big part of how I run marketing today, which is the importance of understanding our buyer, understanding what makes them tick, understanding how they use our product on a day-to-day basis. And there's a lot of great ways that we can do this today. Some of my favorites are using a customer advisory board to really ask some of those, similar to these, those hard questions, right? Those rapid fire questions to understand how people feel about our product, as well as looking at reviews on sites like G2 or TrustRadius to just understand how people talk about our product at the end of the day. I think that informs where we're going.
Yeah, this resonates with me a lot because my first, internship after my MBA was with life insurance. I had to literally walk 15 kilometers every day to the remote parts of the country and, identify the influential people in those areas and appoint them as agents. So I didn't know that I was doing influencer marketing back in the day. But yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Absolutely. No, you learn so much when we're in front of customers.
Absolutely. Right. Here's question number two. One thing you love about being a co-founder alongside Mr. Schwartz?
Ah, that's a good one. We're actually rarely in the office today. I mean, it's been so hard to be, face to face with each other. And I think having the right co-founder in a business or, really just a partner in what you do. I mean, if you're not co-founding a business and you're just in a specific role, it's having that person who's different than you, but you can respect what each other excels at. And I think that's what we've figured out over the years. Out of the gate, at first, it's a little bit harder because you're very much stepping on each other's toes, but eventually you learn how to get out of the way and you let each other really excel at the areas that, bring value to the business.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's almost like being married.
It's true. We call each other our work wives.
Right. So here's question number three. What's one episode of your podcast, The Marketer's Journey, that you suggest every marketing or salesperson listening to this must listen to?
Oh, wow. That's also a really hard one. I'll first say why it's so hard. And if people haven't listened to the podcast before, every week I get to chat with a different CMO. And, the episode kind of works in terms of first understanding how they got to be a CMO, what their path was to get there, what shaped them into the type of leader they are today. And then we talk a little bit about their go-to-market strategy. And I think what's interesting is everyone's approach is quite different in terms of how they got to where they are. You know, I recently interviewed the CMO of Box, you know, competitor to Dropbox. We all know that space.
Yeah.
And just understanding in that example, you know, how Chris there got to the CMO gig was actually through a customer success type of role that he joined the company with. And then you contrast that to a woman named Archana, who's at Airtable, who came through data science. And you contrast that to a guy like Chandar, who was the CMO of Marketo before now being at Coupa, and was all about brand building. Everyone's path is a little bit different. And I think that's the part that's so unique is I think you should go and take a look at, you know, some of these people's backgrounds first. Determine the background that most matches where you're coming from and understand how they elevated themselves to that CMO role.
Yeah. Can't agree more. In fact, I had the chance to talk to, John Miller of Marketo, and he had a very similar perspective about this as well. So yeah, I guess goes back to, I've spoken to CMOs from marketing backgrounds, product backgrounds, SDR backgrounds. So yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, John's great. He's got great perspectives always. Yeah. He's a good friend of mine.
Right. So here's question number four. Complete the following sentence. If you had the power to time travel to the pre-pandemic time, what is one thing that you would change in the way you did marketing?
Oh, wow. First off, my favorite movie is Back to the Future. So I'm living my dream here. If I could go back, I think I would have gotten to know my team better. I think we had such an easy opportunity to get to know each other in a pre-pandemic world when we were working side by side with one another. And it's gotten a lot harder. And I'll be honest, I haven't mastered this new world where, you know, remote is the reality for many of us still, either by choice or necessity. And I think if I went back, I would just spend more time getting to know people beyond work to understand what gets them to tick a little bit more outside, and so I could be more supportive.
You know, I love this answer the most of all because, you know, a lot of people might have said something about, taking a different decision, not invested on events or something like that. But I really love that, you know, you went to, you took the people direction. I love that.
I mean, this is what I wish I did. I wish I had done it. Easy to say it now, right? Everything's easy in retrospect, but appreciate that.
Yeah. Right. Here's the final rapid fire question. If you were to write your next book or a sequel to your first book, what would it specifically be about? And how would you title it?
I've toyed with this. I mean, first off, I never thought I'd write a book, and to end up going through the process, which was really a great experience, and to have it become a bestseller on Amazon. I mean, these have all been things that, you know, I think if you looked at my high school yearbook, I probably would have been the least likely to write a book.
High five, same here. And I've also published 8 books.
So, you know, I have toyed around with writing another book. I think if I were to jump into that, I've played with some concepts in my mind. I think one shift that we're starting to see more and more with marketing is that marketing is about the entire journey. And it's no longer, you know, for a while we heard how it's no longer about lead gen, it's about marketing qualified leads. And then we heard it's not about marketing qualified leads, it's about account-based marketing. But now I think the next shift is it's really about the entire customer experience. And that customer experience starts at the very first point where someone becomes aware of you, all the way through to their opinions of you as a customer and how we shape that as a whole. Right now, a lot of those parts in some organizations just aren't owned. You know, you get to the point where marketing says, okay, well, you know, we figured out how to partner with sales. You know, we can't figure out CS, or we have figured out CS, but we can't figure out advocacy. Those elements, I think, are going to be more and more the expectation of the marketer. I was chatting late last year with Jay Baer, who's a great marketing thought leader. And we did he helped me co-run our customer advisory board event. And his theory that I'll kind of steal from a little bit here was that we're going to reach a point where we're either going to continue to hear about marketing or we're going to stop hearing about marketing and just hear about customer experience. And I'm starting to believe that this customer experience is going to dominate more and more inside of organizations, because it's that person who can connect with the sales leader, with the CS leader, and with a vision of how we create a consistent customer story. So back to your question on the book, I would love to try and chart out, you know, that role and what that looks like, you know, to really unite an entire organization.
That is amazing. And also, you know, I'm inspired by the one quote of Jay Baer, where he said that with every touch point, you're either moving your customer towards the organization or away from you, which summarizes what he just said. So yeah, absolutely on point. Love that.
Yeah, very well put. I've seen him talk a lot about that. I mean, Jay does a good job of talking not just about marketing, but ultimately, you know, the opinions that our buyers form with us and how to embrace them through good or bad. So not surprising you'd say something there.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? You've hit all five questions out of the park. That's fantastic.
Woo, that was fun.
Right. So, but, you know, for the last 40 minutes or so, I think we touched so many things around content experience, customer engagement, and all of that. But before I say my thank yous and let you go, I want to ask you this. Is there a parting message that you would like to share with our audience? I'll give you some context. Our audience are predominantly SaaS marketers and SaaS salespeople with at least about 5+ years of experience around the globe.
Sure. Yeah. I know a big part of this podcast is all about account-based marketing. And I think that there's some confusion with account-based marketing right now. And it's, I'm not an ABM hater. I'm actually, you know, I'm not going to write a book called Fuck ABM. I think that what happens with a lot of, you know, buzzwords and technology is we focus on the first steps. Right. And for in a large part in the market, we've associated ABM with what I said earlier, identify and attract. Right. Look at solutions like Sixth Sense, which we need. They help us identify the right buyer and attract them through ad play. Yeah. But really, to execute ABM properly, we need to engage these buyers. And that's where we need to think about where we go from there. You know, you're starting to hear terms like account-based experience. I think this is a closer term to it because it's the experience that that buyer has with your brand at every single stage. So maybe my call to action here is to make sure that if you're investing in ABM, you think just as much about who you want to attract as how you're going to keep them engaged, because that is ultimately what we talked so much about here today, is that personalization, that Spotify-like experience, that Netflix-like experience. That is what's going to get someone to come back and open up your content each time, just the same way we open up to watch that next movie tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an amazing message. You know, at the end of the day, whatever you do, make sure that it's in the best interest of the customer and not yourself. Yeah, there needs to be a balance. There needs to be a North Star, but still keep them as focus. Absolutely love that. And if the listeners of the podcast, if they want to get in touch with you, where can they find you and what are the best reasons to connect with you?
Sure. So I love LinkedIn as a channel to share content, share ideas. That's a place for sure. The other is you can go grab my book. It's F#CK, which, you know, kind of, you know, the scuzzy search on Amazon doesn't work so well for F-bombs, but that's how you'll find the book on Amazon. You can read a little bit more there. Or you mentioned the podcast earlier. You know, tune into our podcast like this one and, you know, The Marketer's Journey, available on Spotify, iTunes, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Randy. I absolutely love this conversation. There is so much nuggets of wisdom that I could, you know, go back and listen at least a couple more times to make the best out of it. But really appreciate you taking out the time and doing this with us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Yag. I really appreciate the opportunity and thanks to everyone for tuning in.
Amazing. For the listeners, that's that from us in this episode. And until we connect with you the next time with another guest and another topic, this is bye from me, Yag. Have a good day and take care.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations Podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.